Finally, the train wheezes asthmatically to a halt beside a station overlooking a Royal Air Force base, with a cluster of hangars outside the gate, and some enormous airliners and transport aircraft gently gathering moss on the lawn outside. Breathing a sigh of relief, I walk up the path to the museum annex and head for the main exhibit hall. It's time to go to work. Pay attention now. This briefing will self-destruct in 15 minutes. My name is Bob, Bob Howard. At least that's the name I use in these memoirs. True names have power, even if it's only the power to attract the supernatural equivalent of a make-money-fast spammer. I'd rather not put myself in their sights, thank you very much. And I work for the Laundry. The Laundry is the British government's secret agency for dealing with magic, quote-unquote. The use of scare quotes is deliberate. As Sir Arthur C. Clarke said, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. So, magic is what we deal with. Note that this does not involve potions, pentacles, prayers, eldritch chanting, dressing up in robes and pointy hats, or most, but not all of the stuff associated with the term in the public mind. Nope, our magic is computational. The realm of pure mathematics is very real indeed, and the things that cast shadows on the walls of Plato's cave can sometimes be made to listen and pay attention if you point a loaded theorem at them. This is, however, a very dangerous process, because most of the shadow casters are unclear on the distinction between pay attention and free buffet lunch here. My job, applied computational demonologist, comes with a very generous pension scheme, because most of us don't survive to claim it. Magic, being a branch of pure mathematics, and computers being machines that can be used to perform lots of mathematical tasks very fast, it follows that most real practicing magicians start out as computer science graduates. The Laundry, the government agency for handling this stuff, started out as a byblow of the Second World War codebreakers at Bletchley Park, the people who built the first working programmable computers, and the domestic side of our work, preventing accidental incursions by incomprehensible horrors from beyond space-time, has been growing rapidly in recent decades. You may have noticed there are more computers around these days, and more computer programmers. Guess what? That means more work for the Laundry. I have a somewhat embarrassing relationship with Wolverhampton. Back when I was at university in Birmingham, I nearly landscaped it by accident. I was trying to develop a new graphics algorithm. Planar, homogeneous matrix transformations into dimensions dominated by gibbering horrors tend to attract the Laundry's attention. They got to me just in time, just before the nameless horrors I was about to unintentionally summon into this world, and made me a job offer I wasn't allowed to refuse. Mo's history is similar. Indeed, I was involved not only in recruiting her, but in keeping her alive until she could be recruited. That was some years ago. Mo and I have been together for, about 6 years. We tied the knot nearly 3 years ago, using the urgent need to break a behavioral gesh as an excuse to do something we both wanted to do anyway. So, I'm here at RAF Cosford, an active Air Force base which is also home to the Royal Air Force Museum Annex, where they keep the stuff that's too big to fit in their North London site at Duxford. Ostensibly, I'm here to examine an aircraft that has been the locus of some disturbing incidents, and to stop those incidents recurring. Also, thanks to Angleton, I'm supposed to take a look at something in Hangar 6. One of the things you learn fairly fast in the Laundry is that most people in the British Civil Service and Armed Forces don't know you exist. You, your organization, your job, the field you work in, are classified so deeply that the mere knowledge that such a classification level exists is itself a state secret. So, to help me do my job, I carry something that we laughably call a warrant card. It's a form of identification. It comes with certain powers attached. When you present your warrant card for inspection, in the course of official business, the recipients tend to believe you are who and what you say you are, for the duration of that business. Not only that, you can bind them to silence. Of course, trying to use your card outside official business tends to attract the attention of the auditors. And having attracted their attention once or twice, I've never been too keen on finding out what happens next. The RAF Museum is fronted by a shiny new glass and steel aircraft hangar of an exhibit hall. I march right up to the front desk. There's no queue. Present my warrant card and say, Bob Howard, I'm here to see Mr. Hastings. The woolly-headed volunteer behind the cash register puts down her knitting and peers up at me over the rim of her bifocals.
Admission is £5, she chirps.
I'm here to see Mr. Hastings. I force a smile and adjust my grip on the warrant card.
Is that a season pass?
She looks confused. What? I shove the card under her nose. I have an appointment with Warrant Officer Hastings, I repeat, trying to keep a note of impatience out of my voice. I'm from the Department of Administrative Affairs. It's a thin bluff. Jeans and T-shirt aren't normal office attire for the civil service, even in this weather. But I'm crossing the fingers of my free hand and trusting my card to untangle enough of her neurons to get the message across. A meeting to discuss the, business in Hangar 6. She blinks rapidly.
Oh, Hangar 6. That's a bad job. It hasn't been the same since Norman had his health and safety inspection. They used to keep the whirlwind in there, did you know? You're wanting Jeffrey, aren't you?
Would that be Warrant Officer Hastings? I ask, hopefully.
Oh, yes.
She pushes her knitting aside with one liver-spotted hand and picks up the telephone with another.
Jeffrey? Jeffrey? There's a man here to see you. Who did you say you were? Mr. Howarth. Yes, to see you now. He's out front.
She puts the phone down.
Jeffrey will be here in a couple of minutes, she confides. He needs to scrub up first.
I tap my toes and whistle tunelessly as I look around the entrance hall. There's something casting a weird shadow overhead. I look up and find myself staring at the bulging ventral fuel tank of an English Electric Lightning Interceptor, dangling from the ceiling like a demented model maker's pride and joy. It's enough to stop the foot tapping for a moment. If the cable fails, I'll be squashed like a bug. But a moment's consideration tells me that it's highly unlikely. So I stare wistfully at the lightning for a couple of minutes. Two missiles, sharply raked razor-thin wings, a huge pregnant belly full of fuel, and the two screamingly powerful engines that once rammed it from a cold start to 1,000 miles per hour in under a minute. Life would be so much simpler if our adversaries could be dealt with by supersonic death on the wing. But alas, human resources aren't so easily defeated.
Mr. Hogarth?
I turn round. There's a bluff-looking middle-aged man in blue overalls standing by the front desk. Sandy, receding hair, a gingery regulation moustache,